You're listening to the weekly podcast of Life Ministry Centre. For more information, visit www.lmc.org.au.
For those who don't know me, I'm actually a minister by training, but for the last 20-odd years, I have hopped into a pair of very unusual overalls, and I have been engaged in, a specialised work of using art and storytelling as a way to connect with people from all walks of life. The people whom we prayed for in that second part of our communion service, those are the people whom I just constantly want to mix with, engage with, whether it's in schools, community groups, out in the open, whether it's in prisons, anywhere where there's an open opportunity to set up an art board like this and to paint and to tell a story or two. I am very conscious we have a lot of different ages here, and for our young people, I hope that you will enjoy and take something away from this morning that you can have a go at doing at home. If I'm in a school, sometimes I have the facilities to hand out some paper and some crayons and that and actually do an art lesson with you. So I thought that that's what I would do now without the materials. And you can actually pick up a lot if you watch. But I'm going to, and this might seem a strange thing to do in a church setting, but I'm going to give an art lesson 101. And I'm hoping that you'll pick up some things that you can actually go home and have a go at doing, whatever painting or picture you want to do. The reason I like doing this is that when you think about it, most people very rarely step into an art gallery or an art exhibition unless it's somebody you know. And even when you go and look at art, you only see the finished painting or drawing. You don't see the process. And even then, you very rarely get to meet the artist and ask him what on earth was going on in your head, or, you know, what was going on there as you were creating this. So one of the things I love to do is to actually do art live in front of people. I take art off the wall so you can actually get to see a little bit of the process, and you can pick up a lot from watching. But also, I'm going to do something that I don't do all that often, and that is, as I go through this painting, I'm going to be sharing a little bit of what's going on in my mind. Now, some of you might find that a little bit scary, but that's okay. But I'm going to just share some thoughts and reflections that go on in my mind as I'm painting. Now, the painting I'm going to start on is one that's in my head. I've done the homework, I've done the thinking about it, so I'm ready now to execute. And that is where it gets a little bit tricky, because, believe it or not, the hardest thing about painting is getting started. That's right. I can still look at an empty canvas or a board and waste a whole day. Six cups of coffee later, I'm still looking at a blank canvas because there's a little voice in my head that is saying, what do you think it's saying? You're going to mess up. It's going to be rubbish. No one's going to like it. Don't start, because you'll make a mistake. And if you keep listening to that voice, you'll never get started. Somehow you've got to turn that voice down and just start. Now, some artists start by ruling their paper up into a whole lot of lines and doing a sketch. Some artists actually get a pot of paint. Now, please don't do this in the lounge, but they'll just throw some paint onto the canvas, and that's enough to kind of tell that voice to get lost. I'm just going to go for it. For me, I like to do a very quick sketch, and then I start throwing my colours on. But fortunately, in this case, my colours are what we call soft pastels, so they're not wet. They do get a little bit grubby on the hands. That's why I do paint my overalls. So if I wipe my hands, it doesn't really matter. But I am going to just start with a line across here, because where we're going is we're going outside into the place I love, and that is out into nature. We're down at the beach, sort of like what's on the front of my overalls, but it's going to be a little bit different. And so the line I draw first of all, and you can sort of play around with it if you don't like it exactly where it is, that is called the horizon line. Now, what is the horizon line? Yep. Spot on. As you look out into the distance, it's as far as your eye can see. It's where the sky meets the water or the land. So I always start with that. And then I start moving down a little bit. I'm thinking, okay, that's going to be the sky. This is going to be the water. But I'm going to have the beach down here. So we'll have the water sort of round about here. This is where the water sort of hits the beach. And then I want to have a pathway leading down onto the beach. So this is going to be sort of the pathway here. I'm just drawing some of the sand dunes in. So that's going to be the pathway, beach. This is going to be grass and sand. That's going to be the water. That's going to be the sky. And that gets me into the painting. I'm not listening to that voice anymore. I'm now engaged in what's happening on my paper. So I'm now wanting to throw out another hint, and that is that when you do a landscape or a seascape, it's always good to start from the top and work down. There's a reason for that, which you'll see at the end. But I'm going to ask for a little bit of help here. What sort of colours can we put into the sky to make it look really beautiful and interesting? So, yes. Some light blue will certainly do that. I'm just keeping those in mind. We're going to mix these together. Yep. This gentleman here. Yep. Put some white in, maybe for some soft clouds there. Yep, down here. Reds, we'll put a hint of red in. Yep. Bit of pink, yep. And some yellow. Look, I'm glad you've given me a whole lot of different colours there, because this is the second thing about our art lesson, and that is have fun with colour. Don't just use one colour. So I'm not just going to put one blue there. We're going to mix all of those colours into the sky, because colour is what really makes your painting come alive. So we'll start with some pinks. We'll put in a little bit of light blue. I think that was one of them. So we'll just put a little bit of light blue there. The great thing about pastel is you can kind of mix these colours together as you are putting them sort of one on top of the other. We'll go for a little bit more pink. And again, I just like to mix these colours together. But someone said a little bit of red, but we'll go for a little bit of light pink there, a bit more pinky red. We'll go for something a little bit darker up the top. Here we go, just another blue to mix in. But then we'll go for some of that red. Well, imagine the sun. It's just, it's just a little bit of sun there. So we'll just put a hint of yellow and a hint of orange. There we go. And how many colours is that? I've lost count. There's a few there. And we'll go for just a touch of red. You don't have to put a lot in, just a little bit here and there. Now, the sky, even though we've spent a bit of time on it, is not the most important part of this painting. We're going to move further down, but it's good to have a sky that's kind of interesting, and I like that. So thank you for those colours. Let's move down to the ocean. What colours can we put into the ocean? Yes? Blues and orange. I'm glad you said that, and I'll come back to that in a minute. Some blue and orange, yep. Brown. Sorry? White. Oh, I forgot to put the white in. Someone mentioned white before. We'll just put that hint. There's some little clouds there just sort of flying across the sky. Over here. Yep. Sorry? Brown. Okay, we'll put brown in. I will do that. I'm easy. I come from the Gold Coast and lived on the coast for 20 years. And when I first came down to Melbourne, I was actually asking a similar question. What colours can we put into the water? And it was all brown, grey. And I'm going, we don't have those colours up in Queensland. But anyway, let's put some blues in. So we'll start with some blue. And I'm glad that somebody has mentioned a little bit of orange, a little bit of yellow. I'm also going to put some pink in here, and that is because the water, when you have it in a glass, is it coloured? I used to think it had no colour at all until I was watching Catalyst a little while ago, and it actually says that there is a slight colour of blue in water, but it's so light you can hardly see it. But nonetheless, the water actually picks up the colours that are in the sky. So I'm going to put some of those colours that are in the sky in the water as we start to put more of the blues in. I'm also going to put a little bit of greeny blue in. I like green blue. Let's put that in. Here we go. And then we'll put some of those other colours in. Now, the water is really interesting to have a go at painting, because when you think about it, We're really trying to capture something that is fluid, something that's moving, something that's wet, and that's really hard to do, but I think we'll get there. Let's just put a little bit of, we'll go for a bit of pink, and someone said orange. So let's just put a touch of pink in there, just a light touch. You don't have to do a lot. And just a little bit of orange down there. Again, you don't have to put a lot in. And the brown bit, I'll put that in a moment, so hang in there. But before we do, I've got some movement to put into the water. Let's put some waves. So we're going to have some waves coming in onto the beach. I really want this beach to look like that you want to walk down onto the sand and then sort of jump out and go for a swim out in the water, catch one of those waves. So let's just put some of those waves there. Have a little bit of other movement as we go out. We'll have a little bit of movement down here into the where it's going to come down onto the beach. And because waves, when they sort of hit the beach, there's usually a little bit of white on the top of the waves. Let's just put just a hint of white like that. And I'm hoping they're looking like waves now. Do they look like waves? Okay, there we go. And a little bit more white down here. And then that's where we can put some of our brown. I'm keeping that brown in mind. Let's get some light brown, if that's all right. And we'll just put a little bit of light brown there, because this is where it's really shallow. And we now can move down onto the beach. Here we go. And I'm going to put some sand colour here. Now, as I'm doing this, and I'll keep just sharing a little bit of what goes on in my mind, I get to a point where, as I'm painting, you kind of go off into thinking about other things. And I want to just share with you a struggle that I've always had with, the work of an artist. As I stepped out and doing this as a full-time ministry, that's always been prominent in my mind. This is a ministry. It comes first. I want to serve people. I want to connect with people. But you've also got to pay the bills. And you've also, if you've got a family, which I have, and you've got ordinary things that you've got to sort of pay for in our very commercial world, the question is, how do you try and make a living with your art? What price do you put on a painting? And there are some paintings that I do try and sell, because like Paul, who when he was out on his mission work, he would sometimes be a maker of tents so that he wouldn't have to be sort of sponging off people all the time. He said, if I can earn a little bit of money along the way, that will help pay the bills. But then, of course, he was reliant on also the church's generosity. So I wanted to try and walk the same way, not to be totally a sponge. I wanted to earn a little bit of money with my art, but at the same time, realizing the only way I could keep going was if people were also generous. But here comes the question. What price do I put on a painting? And that's really tricky, because is it simply adding up the cost of pastels plus time, $50 an hour, plus a little bit of GST? Is that how you put a value on a painting? The trouble is that I do all sorts of paintings. Some of my paintings take only a couple of minutes to do, like this one. And yet, I could be at home and I can not be in front of people with the pressure on to do it fast, and I could slow right down and I could do the same painting but do it take a couple of hours to do it. So the question is that painting then, the one that takes longer, worth more than this one that only takes a few minutes to do? And I knew, no, that's not right. There's got to be another way to put a value on a painting. Now, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to put lots and lots of grass on these sandhills. And even though it's grass, I want the grass to look interesting. So what do you think I'm going to do with the grass? Put lots of colour in. That's right. So even though there are not always going to be, it's not always green grass around, I'm going to be putting a bit of green in, but I'm also going to be putting other colour in as well. So as I'm doing this, I decided that maybe another way to value your artwork is to compare it with someone else's art and see what prices, kind of do a bit of, a bit of snooping around, see what other people put on their artwork. So I had the opportunity to go up to Sydney, and while I was there, I saw there was an exhibition of one of my all-time artists, Australian artists. I won't mention his name, but I just love his work. And I went along and was just enjoying looking at his work, which most of his paintings were probably about twice the size of mine. But then I looked at his prices. And down the bottom, most of them were around about $250,000. And I looked at that and I thought, lucky dog. I mean, boy, you only have to paint maybe a couple of those in your lifetime, and you're right. But then as I was looking at that, I was thinking, look, this is ridiculous. There's no way that I can compare myself with this guy, even though in one sense our art might be similar. And as I was looking at his art, I knew that I could sort of paint things that were like his. But there's a lot of other differences. He is someone who has won some really major art awards. I haven't. But more importantly, he's someone that has been picked up by some of the really top-line galleries, and they, of course, market his art to the really rich and wealthy. And when you're marketing to the top end of Australia, the business or the corporation side, you've got to basically have really big prices on, because they expect a big price. They want to buy a painting that is seen as an investment. But I knew for myself that I was not going to be really working in those areas. I go to schools, I go to prisons, I go to kindergartens, I go to just out in the open places to meet ordinary people from all walks of life. And I know it's sort of like in the the film The Castle, where the father's talking to his son and says, "What price has he got on that thing?" And the response is, "It's such and such." And the father replies, "Tell him he's dreaming." That's right. And I knew that I could really put any price I like on my art, but basically I'd be dreaming. So I was thinking, well, what do I do? And I fortunately ran into, I was spending a little bit of time, and I ran into a friend who is an artist up in Noosa. He's, again, an exceptionally good artist. And we were just sort of talking about this, and he just shared some thoughts with me. One idea we came up with was, well, basically, you just got to wait till you die, and then your art sort of goes up in value. Or maybe you could, cut your ear off and do something like that. But putting the jokes aside, he said, "Linton, really what you got to see is that the art world, as most of you know, is a really strange world. There are no standards. There are no givens." And he says, that is something that can really sink you or make you. And he said, the only way really to go through it is to go away to a quiet place and to have a cup of wine, glass of wine. And he said, in the quietness and in your heart of hearts, he says, is to put a value on your art, what you think it is worth. And he says, of course, you've got to take into account the cost of materials. Of course, you've got to take into account where you think you fit on the, on the ladder of who's who in the Australian art scene. Of course, you've got to take into account who you are marketing your art to. But he said, in the final analysis, what you have to do is you have to come up with a kind of a price that you feel in your heart is a price that, when someone pays you for a piece of art and walk away with it, you're not resenting the fact that you feel they've got something really cheap. You're not feeling angry that they've ripped you off. At the same time, he says, if you have any kind of moral center or a conscience or an ethical sort of side to your art, he says you need to have a price also where when someone pays for your painting, you don't feel as they walk away that you have ripped them off. And that I found really helpful. And I certainly did that. And I'm not going to tell you what I came up with. I came up with a range of different prices, because there are different sorts of art I do. But it really helped me to, work my way through that really challenging time. But as I was thinking about that, now, just by the way, young people, I now want to, I've got the grass there. I just need to quickly put a little bit of orange in there. Why not red? We'll put a bit of orange, and here we go. There we go. I want to create the fact that we can walk down through this path onto the beach. So I'm going to put some trees on these sand dunes. Do you think we need to put little trees or big trees? Big trees, that's right, because these trees are closer to us. And whatever is closer to us is going to be really, really big. So these trees are going to reach almost from the bottom to the top. And so I'm just going to start putting some of these trees here. And as I do this, I now want to, some of you might be really wondering where I've been going with this discussion. But of course, as I paint and as I think about these issues, always I'm also thinking about another issue that is one I constantly wrestle with. And it is just like we try and work out what value a piece of art is, what about ourselves? What value are we? How do you place a value on a person? Now, the world we live in, the very culture we breathe in with everything that we see and every place we go to, is very clear on how we value each other. It is all about externals. It's about how good you look, whether you are one of the attractive ones. It's about how successful you are, whether you are a winner or a loser. And it's about how much stuff you've, got, how wealthy you are. And you will measure other people on those. We can't help it. It's what we do. And people, in a sense, will value and measure you on it. But when you start to think about this, it's actually a really crazy way to value ourselves and others. If it comes to the attractiveness, let's be honest. When I was thinking this one through, not all of us, in fact, a very small number of us, are ever going to fit into that category that the magazines and the media and the TVs say are the beautiful ones. And even then, who says that they are the beautiful ones? What about if you just, you know, have a slight difference, you know, and you don't fit into that mold? There is, I guess, a real challenge, particularly more for our women, but it's also becoming more and more of an issue for our guys on how we look. And I'm going to be liked or loved if I'm attractive, and if I'm not, I'm an ugly, whatever it is, worthless. The difficulty, again, is the trouble is, even if you are one of the beautiful ones, you're not always going to be holding on to that because age itself takes its toll. And I keep telling young people there is going to come a day, and Peter and I know this full well. We used to be one of the beautiful ones, but there comes a day when you are going to start to sag and bag and drag, and there's nothing you can do about it. So does that mean? Does that mean then that you are now one of the ugly ones, one of the worthless ones? And let's be honest, that's how a lot of our older people really struggle with in our youth-dominated societies. I need to put some leaves on these trees. So I'm just going to put just a touch of leaves up here. I'll get another colour. Here we go. I was also came up against this. I have, please, just this is my blatant bit of self-promoting here. I have a number of cards and prints over on the table there. Please have a look at those before you go, because once you get over to where all the real fun is, where the jumping castles and that, then you'll miss an opportunity to see something that you might like. But over there, there are a couple of books that I have produced based on my art and storytelling. And when I had the privilege of doing these in partnership with my daughter, who is a graphic artist, and she did all the digital side of it, getting it ready for printing. And the first book, she said, "Dad, we really need a picture of you on the back so that people can, you know, with your bio, they can see what you look like." And I says, "No way. People don't want to know what I look like." So the first book went to print without a picture of me. The second book, when we came around it, she says, "Dad, we really need a picture of you." I said, reluctantly, "Okay." So she took me out to the backyard. She had an SLR camera. So it's kind of like that, and I'm sort of, you know, sort of trying to pose. And then she goes back, downloads all those images onto Photoshop, and then she, I can see her sort of winding through them. And at the end, she sort of looks at me and she goes, "Dad, you know, we can change a lot of things with Photoshop. With all those sunspots on your face, we can just wipe them out. That double chin, you know, we can get rid of that too, Dad." And I'm actually feeling really, really insecure. And I'm thinking, if I'm struggling with this, how much more do our young people face this every day? Whether it's the comments they get from bullies, or whether it's what on Facebook, or whether it's comparing themselves in the mirror with what's on the media. There has to be a deeper and more a more life-giving and affirming way of valuing us. And if you think, well, if I don't have the looks, then maybe I'll just go for something, you know, I'll be climbing to the top of the ladder in my given profession, or I'm just going to get as much wealth and stuff as I can. Let me just finish with this one little story here that I had to laugh at. Over in, I think it was over in Dubai, there was a craze there for a period of time where the young guys found a really cool way to pick up girls. And they, again, very much worried about their looks. They said it's useless just leaving a phone number. Let's leave an image of ourselves. So they used to buy mobile phones and take a selfie, take a photo of themselves. And, of course, their number would be in the phone and they would just leave that with a girl, maybe just in the handbag or on a seat or in a taxi or somewhere. So the idea of the girl would look at the phone and then look at the picture and go, "Ooh, nice guy," and then ring. But what they started finding out is that the girls were certainly picking up the phones, but they weren't looking at the image. They were looking at how expensive the phone was. And if it wasn't top of the line, out went the phone. And it really is a crazy, crazy world that we live in. Ecclesiastes, which is one of my favourite books, I guess because it's a real melancholic book, suits my personality, but it basically says, if you're someone who's trying to strive for your sense of worth, who you are, if you're trying to do that through getting stuff, being successful, being attractive and all of that, the writer says, I've tried it and it is vanity upon vanity. It is emptiness. It is like the wind. You can't grab a hold of it. And can I liken it to the white water that washes up onto the beach? There are some days you can walk along the beach and there's a whole lot of bubbles there. And when you pick up a handful of bubbles, they just glisten in the light. And they're all these beautiful rainbow colours. And yet very shortly they'll just pop and there'll be nothing there. And that's basically what Ecclesiastes, the author of Ecclesiastes, was saying. He was saying that if you're wanting to find your sense of worth in the things of this world, then it's like trying to hold on to those bubbles. They look good, they might appear fantastic for a while, but they all go. You can't hold on to them. This is where I would like to finish off, and that is what I have come to my own journey, and I continue to come back to this space, and that is when I'm determining my worth, I look around in the beautiful natural world, and I say, if there is someone like an artist who's put this together, what about when I look at myself? How does God feel about me? Because ultimately, that is what gives us our real sense of worth. And can I dare be a little bit creative here and suggest that when God created this world and when he created you and I, he went to a quiet place and he had a glass of wine and he sipped it and he said, what worth am I going to put on you? He puts the wine cup down and he says, priceless. You are priceless. In God's eyes, and if you don't believe me, you only have to look at God's affirmation of us that we are made in his image. And part of that, when you start to unpack it, is that he looks at each one of us with incredible worth. And it's not based on outward things. It means even if you are flawed, even if you get lost, when Jesus came to give us a full image of what God is like, Jesus came to tell us God will go out of this world to get you back, to hold on to you. Because there are some paintings that I do that are, for me, priceless. I don't want to sell them. I want to hang on to them. And I want to look at them. I want to enjoy them. I want to spend time with them. And in the same way, each day. And here again, I'm just trying to dig a little bit deeper. When I say God values us and God loves us, some people actually, I think, fall into the mindset, yeah, well, that's God's job to love us. That's God's thing. What if I said, when God looks at you, no matter who you are, he likes you. He likes spending time with you. It's not a grudge or a grind. He finds incredible beauty in you. He finds mystery in you. He finds amazing things that keep him just wondering, I love this person. I love what they're doing with the life that I've given to him as a gift. I want to be involved in that. There is something about God's presence deep down, that voice, that little voice that I have to keep going to, which says, Linton, your worth is based on God's incredible love for you. And when you really believe that and hold on to that, it changes the way you think about yourself. It also changes the way you look at others. And you start to see God's image in each other person, no matter how different they are, no matter how flawed they are. It frees you up from grasping and trying to climb that ladder and trying to compete with everyone, and enables you to be more of a giver and a servant to others as you want to share yourself with them, because God is constantly sharing himself with you. So I'm going to put my signature on this. I want people to know this is my work of art. When we get to glory, there's only one signature that's written on each one of our lives, and that is the signature of Jesus, of God. We belong to him. We are of immense worth and value to him. Thank you very much. Let's just quickly pray. We just thank you for what that made in your image means. And for each of our young people, we just know that they have an incredible life that you've given them, that you can see incredible value with their gifts, their personality, their opportunities. Help us as parents and as caretakers to help guide and to shape these wonderful young people. For ourselves, as we journey through life, as we get older, help us also to not lose that sense of our value in your eyes, and to see again all the opportunities that we have where you want to continue to live your life in and through us as we are truly made in your image. We pray this in your name. Amen. Thank you.